This is Hannah Dasher, and you're listening to DJ Chris Armstrong.
Welcome to the show, where country music's biggest stars share their stories, and the hits keep coming.
Hey, y'all, it's Lainey Wilson.
Hey, everybody, it's John Party.
Hey, guys, it's Jordan Davis.
And you're listening to DJ Chris Armstrong.
You're listening to DJ Chris Armstrong.
DJ Chris Armstrong.
This is Country Conversations with your host, DJ Chris Armstrong.
How's it going? You all right? Hello?
Hey, Chris. Oh, I was looking forward to hearing your accent.
That's a lot of people like my accent. I think growing up or just being wherever you're from, your accent is just normal. And it's just, if I could change it, I would. But anyone that you meet loves an accent, I think. No matter where you're from, they love an accent.
Oh, yes. Accents are always fun.
Yeah. Especially you and your twang as well.
Is it twangy? I guess it is.
I'd say so, yeah.
There's so many, you know, dialects of, I don't want to bore you with that, but there's so many, as there are in, you know, the UK, but there's so many different dialects to this, southern dialects.
Yeah. Over here. Even Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland's a really small place. You could be anywhere within an hour, and that is it. And even 20 minutes up the road, there's a different dialect, you know, so that's...
I love it.
Yeah. So that's good. Thank you for taking the time to speak to me. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for reaching out. I'm tickled to be here.
Speaking of dialects, I tend to get hyped up and talk too quick. So if you can't make me out, just tell me to slow down.
I love it. No, you're good. Yeah. So you are Northern Ireland, UK.
Yeah. So I'm like a country music DJ. So I host an online radio show and then I do gigs all across Ireland. Yeah. All across Ireland and Scotland and England and Wales. Yeah.
Hell yeah. I love that. Do you need any music of mine to spin and mix and merge or whatever? Are you good?
Yeah, I was playing. I was in Weymouth in the south of England there on Saturday and I was playing Redneck Ass and someone had come over and asked me, who's that? And I was like, oh, that's Hannah Dasher. And, I think your music's very catchy and it's what country music should be. So it's great to have you here. Big hello to Hannah Dasher. I would say you've got a great energy. You command, a lot of respect with like country music, like diehards. And even to myself, you would remind me, you're like a brunette Dolly Parton. If I shut my eyes, I think you sound a lot like Ashley McBride and the way she sings as well.
Oh, what a compliment. Too. I love Ashley's voice. I could literally, she's one of the few female voices that I could hear on repeat. Like, well, she could sing the alphabet. I love Ashley's voice. Love her voice.
Although, in terms of influences, I've been doing my research, but like you're a big Reba McEntire fan and a bit Alan Jackson.
Big Reba.
Junior, yeah.
Yeah, Reba, Alan Jackson, Eric Church, Aretha Franklin, yeah. Tom Petty.
And then you opened for Hank Jr. So like going from like Woo! Hank being the guy that I love to going and being on a stage with him. How was that?
Do you love Hank Jr.? Oh my gosh. So what was it like to open for Hank? I mean, it was when I got the call that I was opening for Hank and Skinner. And it was just, I didn't do the whole tour. This was just a weekend, you know, I was grateful to have those couple shows with him, but I literally jumped like 5 feet in the air and started crying. Because Skinner is my number one rock and roll band favorite. Skinner is my favorite band of all time. And then Hank Jr. is, you know, probably my favorite country artist, I would have to say. It was surreal. I mean, I stood side stage and cried. The coolest part of that opening night was my guitar went out on me during like my second song. And Ricky Medlock and those guys are standing side stage, you know, watching. And anyway, and then Hank's guitar tech comes running with the white and black leather Telecaster, the Waylon guitar that Waylon gave Hank before he died. Anyway, and puts it around me to play. And I butchered the hell out of my solos. But anyway, because I was just like, I was crying because it was Waylon's guitar, you know. And it was funny because like 20 minutes before my show started, I was he-ing and she-ing with the guitar tech side stage. And because he was polishing off the guitars and he had that guitar out. And I was like, is that what I think it is? And he's like, yes, that's the one. It's when Waylon gave to Hank. And he's like, here, you want to touch it? You know, get a picture with it. I said, hell no, I'm not worthy to even touch the thing. So anyway, but that is why you see on my album cover, the other damn half. I took that picture actually at Waylon's house in his tennis courts, but that guitar, I wanted to repeat that on my suit, just to keep that story alive and to remind me to practice.
what a privilege though. That's quite funny how you're like, no, I can't touch that guitar, and the next thing you're on stage just strumming away.
Can you imagine? Like, well, I mean, like, there's only six of those, I think. I know Keith Urban's got one, David Lee Murphy, I believe, has one or two, and Hank Shooter. I'm trying to think who else has the other one. But I mean, those are the ones.
I remember Marty Stewart, whenever he was inducted into the Country Music Hall of Fame.
I was there.
They brought down the mandolin from the exhibit.
The Bill Monroe.
Yes. And I got emotional watching that. I watched it online, and I remember watching it, and I was like, how amazing is it? Like, how would Marty Stewart feel to be in that moment, looking up to Bill Monroe all those years, and here's his mandolin out of the exhibit in his hands, and he's on there, you know? So I think it's a powerful thing. So, and the same goes for you. You'll remember that moment all your days.
That thing's appraised at like that mandolin. Is it like 2 million or 200,000? It's something ridiculous. I don't know. What I love, Bill Monroe gave Marty a mandolin early in his career when he was a little boy. I believe it was Bill Monroe. Mm-hmm. Anyhow, yeah, it was. And it's the one that Marty plays. And if you look at the back of it, it's got a cross engraved, like scratched mm-hmm. out, a big cross engraved in JC. And that's Johnny Cash. He was on the road with Johnny Cash as, I guess, a teenager or young in his 20s. And Johnny, like, literally was sitting on the bus, and Johnny grabbed that mandolin from Bill Monroe and yanks it from him and gets his car keys out or whatever and engraves a cross in the back with his initials and said, Marty, I don't want you to forget the Lord, and gives it back to him. Isn't that cool?
It's quite a story. I never knew that. That's amazing. I love hearing stuff like that. So you opened up for the Cadillac 3. You're on tour with them. They're actually...
Yes. They were the first... they're, I guess, really the only band that I've ever been on tour with. I've opened for, you know, for several acts for, like, you know, a couple of shows. But as far as an extended, you know, as far as doing a handful, you know, many, many dates, the Cadillac 3 really took a chance on me and really saw something early on. This would be before COVID. The pandemic happened. This would be like in 2017 or so. Those guys saw something in me. And the lead singer, Jaron, started a publishing company. I was about to be out of my first publishing deal at BMG. And so Jaron brought me over to Sony. And Jaron gave me my first electric guitar and said, here, learn it. I think you've got the chops to do it. But yeah, but the Cadillac 3, so they've got quite the following over in the UK, don't they?
Yeah. So they're coming over here next month for a tour around the UK. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to hearing them. But from your first sort of tour to your first cut was Brad Paisley. I must say, for me, I hadn't heard much country music. My mom, like, I grew up, mom and dad, they loved like Charlie Pride and Kenny Rogers and Johnny Cash and that stuff. We used to have cassettes in the car we always listened to on road trips for the family. But I hadn't really listened to much country personally until about 2012, when somebody handed me or heard on the radio Outstanding in Our Field off Brad Paisley's Wheelhouse album. So Brad Paisley was my guy, my entry into country music. And now here I am, like a country music DJ. So equally for you, Brad Paisley was kind of your entryway into getting the cut.
He was my first major cut. He was, and I've always liked him. He's a triple threat. You know, his first records too. He's witty and he's a great songwriter. Great guitar player, great songwriter. Stylistically, we're different. You know, I don't really consider myself a musician. I'm more of an entertainer. But the cool part of that story, I guess, that is that I was fired for writing songs on the job. First job when I moved to town here in Nashville was I was working retail. There's a big place, a big outdoors shop called Bass Pro Shops. They're popular in the U.S. And I sold outboard motors and bass fishing boats. You know, I didn't move there to sell boats. Obviously, I moved here to do the dang thing. But I was literally like Googling, searching, I think, to see if that was a thing, if that idea had been written yet, and I hadn't found it. And so I was like whittling it away, and they called me upstairs. But it was a full circle thing, because like 6 months to that day is when I got my first publishing deal. And it's been a journey, you know. I've had, you know, a few cuts by some others that y'all have heard of, but you know, all the while trying to write for myself. And it's hard to preserve your artistry when you're, you know, made to write with other female acts.
Yeah.
Early on, you know what I mean? But I also believe that that great music just finds its way, and that originality is divinely given, and you know, you can be imitated, but you can't be duplicated.
That's for sure. That's it. I like that saying. That should be on a t-shirt. I like that. But yeah, like you say, you're juggling lots of stuff. So you're working at one point and writing songs at the same time, and then trying to do your own stuff. And you have a big social media following and presence as well. So that's a lot of balls to juggle at the same time.
Oh gosh, I've got a book here that people have been waiting on for me to do finally. And you know, I've got TV stuff, and I got guitars here because I was writing a song yesterday with a guy named Tennessee Jet, who's so talented. And I'm blessed and I'm grateful. And, you know, I think that there's a way to wear the hats. I am growing my team so that I can kind of hand some things over. And, you know, I'm great to have a really good booking agent. And our calendar's filling up this year. And just did one this last week of a Blackberry Smoke. Got another one with them next month that I'm really, really looking forward to. And then the rest of the dates are my headlining tour.
Very good. That's a lot to handle, like I spoke to. And you still manage yourself as well?
I've basically been self-managed, I guess you could say. I've had a couple friends come in along the way to help steer the ship and to be a liaison, you know, for things and all. And that's always helpful. But I've never had someone that, you know, was looking out for really like for the business side of things or really planning out the strategy. The kind of manager that you really need, like the manager that like Ashley McBride has, you mentioned her, like she's got one of the most powerful guys in the business. He's Eric Church's manager, you know? And so all he had to do was put her out on the road early on with Eric Church and then get him to endorse her. And then boom, you know, I always say a big manager could take a monkey to the top. Not that she's a monkey, but I'm just saying, you know, a big manager can make a lot of things happen, but I learned quickly that in the UK, you guys don't buy into the hype. Like you really, you like what you like. And I was just blown away by how well I was received and the how many of you showed up. It was just humbling, and I needed that.
There's a lot of respect, or a lot to be said or commended for somebody like it puts in the work. You know, there's a lot of people just buy their way to where they want to be, but to graph from work your way up, I think you can stand, you know, when you've got to where you want to be, you can stand back and look back and see, this is an effort, and you feel a sense of achievement. So I think you'll get that.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And I don't know. It's not that I haven't looked for management. I am looking for management. I just think that you know, either you get it or you don't. And I think to see me live is to get it. And unfortunately, industry people aren't going to travel a couple hours or more to a show. You know what I mean? You've got to really. It's got to be the right equation, the right time and place, right. Like to an industry show is just not, anyway, it's just, to me, the energy at an industry show is not genuine, and it's just not an ideal showcase for an act. You know, I think to really see an artist like me or any artist like connect with an audience of fans or with an audience that's going to leave as diehard fans. Is so important to go and see. And it's just the music business at Nashville, I can speak for, is just so saturated or oversaturated, Chris, with, you know, everybody's trying to be like, there are 100,000 more people here now trying to do it than there were 10, 12 years ago when I moved to town. And there were a lot of us then, you know what I mean?
I was in Nashville in 2015 and, I was back again in 2018, and even in that
you are.
Space of time, I'd seen a big change.
Yes.
And I'd imagine that it's even more so. I want to go back next year. Next year is 100 years of the Opry, so I'd like to be there for that.
Oh, yes.
But I'd imagine there's a big change even since 2018 until now, you know, but.
Oh my gosh, the skyline is different and all. And the, you know, TikTok has changed that as well too. You know, the internet has done that. TikTok has been a blessing. for me, and as far as exposing me to, you know, to fans. I mean, I was cooking, I was singing, but I was cooking, and, you know, so it kind of united a divided group of people, if you will, which is a beautiful thing. So when you come to a Hannah show, you're going to get gays, rednecks, everybody. Yeah. Versus, you know, for others like Priscilla Block, you know, didn't have a publishing deal, didn't have a record deal, was not an act that labels typically went for.
Yeah.
But she had a song that popped off, and that melody was just undeniable. And, you know, so she's able to make a career, you know, because of that. I think some people are intimidated by all the pies that I have my hands in, but I think the right person will look at me and see this as a no-brainer opportunity. I'm not just an artist. I'm a representative of the genre. I'm a brand, you know. I can't do it all, if you will, but, you know, there's TV in the cards for me. There's, you know, I can co-host award shows, and I can write songs and get cuts and maybe play a little guitar and be a representative of the genre, you know, not just a puppet for a label.
Yeah, that makes good sense. That makes good sense. Even going by talking of like social media and things as well, as we had touched on earlier, like I was reading through different comments from different people, and I think one person said the only country they listen to is Dolly and Dasher. So I think that's...
Oh, really? That is the sweetest.
It's a good double D narrative there, 2D.
I felt like a t-shirt or something. I think I get a lot of Dolly comparisons, and I'm flattered, and I think that's great. And, you know, I would have wanted that, you know, years ago. Yeah. You know, another girl who's a representative of the genre, she took Nashville to Hollywood. You know, I was more so inspired by her wardrobe, I think. I'm a big Burt Reynolds fan. I've got little Trans Ams, and Smokey and the Bandit's like my favorite movie of all time.
Same,
and
yeah.
See, you seen it?
I love Smokey and the Bandit. Great.
I knew I liked you. But Burt Reynolds looks a lot like my daddy. And anyway, but there was a rerun of Best Little Whorehouse in Texas on the TV as a little girl. And, you know, as a little girl, I never wanted mama to buy us. Like, I didn't wear the little cotton Cinderella Disney World underwear. No, I wanted lacy, satin, pretty. I liked pretty things. And I wanted matching nightgowns with house coats and stuff as a little girl. Mm-hmm. And I was just prissy in that way. And so when I saw Best Little Whorehouse in Texas, that is the adult gaudy wardrobe, you know, it's country music, but it's like, it is that. And I was just drawn as a little girl. I'm like, what is this? You know, this was probably in the 90s, you know, when I saw that. But I thought, man, you know, when I can afford to dress like that one day, I'd love to, you know, to have that kind of a wardrobe. So, but I think there's a, you know, she's definitely a, I wouldn't call her my biggest influence, but the comparisons mean a lot to me. And I get a lot of Loretta Lynn, I guess, with the brown hair, but, you know, probably Loretta's, those are some songwriting shoes I'll never be able to fill, but I love her knack for, being bold with truth.
Straight talking. That's it. That's all you want. Three chords and the truth.
Yeah. I said, I love Loretta Lynn's knack for, I loved her as a songwriter for speaking the truth boldly, for being bold truth, you know, Fist City and The Pill and, Don't Come Home Drinking with Love It on Your Mind. I mean, that's, that was some edgy stuff. You know what I mean? And, she could get away with that. And, you know, I'm sure my mother cringes when I saying I'm the one that taught him that thing you like, but I can get away with it. And it's you know, and it's fun.
Yeah, no, it's like I say, back in the day, like songs like that, you say like The Pill and things, I guess they created their own controversy back then too. And like a lot of people were like, we can't be doing this. And I think country music has always nearly been that way. You know, they talk about the gritty issues, and it is a story, and it speaks to people. You know, it's not just another pop song that rings the bell and gets the money in. I think there's a lot of heart behind proper, true, authentic country.
Yes, that's so that you put that so well. Redneck Ass is another example. The label, when I was at the label, didn't want me to release that song. And I understand, I would never lead with a song like that. But why not put that out? That's, you know, that's the one that I haven't released that they're singing every word back to me.
Yeah.
And so to me, just because an algorithm says something doesn't always mean that it's going to stick. Because a boiled egg went viral a couple of years ago on the internet, literally just in recent years. So I just think like with this album, people know that I was giving the fans what they wanted, or at least that's, you know, the songs that I chose are the ones that I tested out live and the ones that I got, you know, the great reaction from that you guys were singing back to me, you know, the second time the chorus came around. So, and I'm working on a live record now, because the way that my band and I do these things live is a lot more greasier and palatable. And you know what I mean? It's the way I really would have wanted it, had I had the time and the resources to get in the studio and spend a lot more time on these tracks.
There's a lot of live albums I would rather listen to the studio version, but one that I speak of though was Eric Church's Caught in the Act live.
Great.
I think it's the best live album I've heard. The energy on it, you know, like you say, like there's songs that sound okay on a record or a CD or whatever, but whenever you're in the venue, you hear them live performed, and the way they're done live, there's a different energy accompanies that. And you talk about the grease and the grittiness, yeah, 100%. And that Caught in the Act live from Eric was phenomenal.
He's a big influence of mine as a songwriter, and I just I revere the guy. He's just and the guys that he writes with, and so you know, when I am gonna release the newer music, you know, you're gonna hear some songs that I've written with some of those guys, like Jeff Hyde, and who's been in Eric's band forever, you can see Jeff on the Outsiders thing, would wear the sunglasses, hold the banjo, whatever. But Casey Beathard and I wrote The Tree together. Casey is someone that I really look up to, and Michael Heaney as well. I've got a song that I've written with Jeff and Michael that I really, really can't wait to release. And I look up to those guys so much. And anyhow, it's you know, it's not easy just to create something out of thin air, but
yeah, it's funny you talk about the different songs that you have recorded at the moment, and like what the record label stipulates or what they recommend that you do. But like, out of all the songs I picked again on Saturday, the one I played was Redneck Ass.
There you go. Well, I mean, you know, the label, you can listen to my first project, and if you haven't, I encourage you to, because it's a great project. If I can say so myself, but I had to throw them some bones. It wasn't like I was hard headed and refused to cut. Yeah, I mean, I wanted to represent and reach all kinds of country fans. You know, you're going to love me, stuff like that, and Left Right, which is, you know, My Honky Tonk, which is the Hannah stuff. And then you got stuff that I've also written on there that has a little more of the pop, yeah, slick thing that's really against what I would want to put out, but the label really wanted me to put out Leave This Bar, and they put a lot of money behind that one, or I say a lot, they put money behind it, I think, you know, to get it to so that it would stream, mm-hmm, you know, well. But again, you know, the ones they didn't put money behind have still, I think, done just as well, because I think, you know, in my gut, those are the ones that the fans want to hear anyway. So yeah. I tried to appease them in that way, but anyhow, I think the game is changing for us independent guys, and I'm so excited, whereas I was just really discouraged, because it's like having a scarlet letter, you know, when you like lose a record deal. At least it used to.
I'm going to give you a date, and hopefully it'll resonate with you, okay? The 27th of September, 2019.
Yeah, September 27, 19. That's my Grand Ole Opry debut. Well, that was my Opry debut.
Yeah, so I've done the same with another pop country artist, and he was clueless. He had no idea. And I thought, for someone that's in country music, you know, for the Opry is where the pinnacle, you know, get into that circle. And I thought, for someone like that, was the date. I rounded off the date when he first played the Opry, and I had no idea what I was talking about. I was like a tumbleweed moment, and then I had to say that was the date you first played the Opry. And then,
well, I think that kind of speaks for itself. You know what I mean? I've got the sign they made me, you know, they make you a sign. At least they made me one that that was reserved for my parking place. And I've got it on display over here by my old cassette tapes and my daddy's and my mama's cassette tapes. I have those on display, the music that I grew up listening to.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, Grand Ole Opry is magical. And I've cried my eyes out it was like my wedding day, if you will. It's I've never been one to plan the wedding. I was always, you know, dreaming about my Opry debut. And anyway, but it was magical. And the most beautiful part, I think, of that day was the staff told me, they're like, we feel like this place has been waiting for you.
Oh, yeah.
And it does. It feels like home. I played it 10 times since, and I want to play a 1,010. Trying to get on rotation there is like, you know, trying to win the lottery, if you will. But I actually tried to do the, I called them a few months ago when they were going to honor Dolly for that thing they just did recently with L. King, and that whole thing went down. But I called them months ago to say, hey, put me on. I'd love to be on the roster here or on the bill. And I was told that it was full. Anyway, but it's because I didn't have a big manager. Yeah. All that to say, and then I ran into Elle night before last, and she won't remember it, but she did. She ran up to me. Anyway, she's crazy, but she's looking great too. She's lost a lot of weight. I think she'd be fun to do some dates with. She's always been really kind when I've met her. Yeah. You know, we've been with her, you know, so.
Again, that's
anyway, but the Opry's magical. Do what?
Sorry, I was going to say she's a real unique voice as well. And she has that.
Oh, so unique. Such a unique. Yeah, I mean, I think she's great. I've never written with her, but I'm pretty sure she writes a lot of her music. And I've always thought she's super talented. But, you know, I always like to see, though, I like to see fellow artists appreciating institutions like the Opry, though. Yeah. You know, your Opry debut is a big deal. And anytime you step on that stage, it's a big deal, especially when you're there to honor other acts. I think every time I'm on that stage, it's my duty to honor those that came before. You know, I've been backstage, you know, 100 times, but refused to set foot in that circle until it was my formal invitation, you know, because I don't believe that I'm worthy. I still don't, you know, I mean, when you look at the Hank Williams and the Patsy Cline's and the, you know, Loretta, I mean, when you look at the talent that we have to, the shoes that we have to fill, I mean, you know, there's still a lot of talent out there in this world, but I just, you know, things tend to get diluted over time. You know, look at handwriting, look at architecture, look at, attire. I mean, things kind of get dumbed down a little bit. And, again, I just, that's one reason I tend to lean on, build upon like the music that I grew up loving, like those 1990s sounds. I guess that's what you hear in my voice. But to me, it's like, well, I don't know. That's what I grew up listening to. And I want to carry that torch forward as much as I can while building upon it. You know, like country rock and roll was kind of like, at least my mother kind of turned her nose up at it, like acts like Travis Tritt or the Kentucky Headhunters growing up. But I love Travis Tritt. I'm hoping to do some with him this year. You know, and that's led me to like Blackberry Smoke and guys like that and the Cadillac 3. And, you know, my live show was very much a rock and roll honky tonk. It's a honky rock show, if you will. And I think there's a place for country to grow for sure.
So I suppose it's a cliche, like, but it is all one big family, and you want to do the, like, whatever family you're in, whether it be your actual blood family or church or country music, you want to do the best for them. You'll promote it in the best possible way, and you have a certain level of respect for that. So I agree with what you're doing. And even like the Opry too, like the Opry, they obviously they take it very seriously. The fact that they cut out the stage in the Ryman and brought it over to Opry House, you know, so you're standing in that very bit of wood that Loretta Lynn stood in, or Johnny Cash.
Yes, in 1974, you know, absolutely. And when it got flooded, I was there. There's a big flood in Nashville in 2010. It was when I just moved to town, and I was working next door. The Bass Pro Shops where I work was right. It's right. It shares the parking lot with the Opry. That's the first thing I thought about when I literally saw that water level rising. And, you know, my ex had me in the car. We were leaving because the water was rising. And anyway, and I was just praying. I was like, God, I hope that stage doesn't get ruined, that circle especially. So it's very sacred. But, you know, again, if I was going to be a professional basketball player, I would want to study the greats and know where I was where I was coming from so that I could build upon that.
So tell us a little bit London then. How did you define country to country? Is that your, was it your first time in the UK?
Ooh, yes, I got my UK cherry pop. Can I say that?
You can say that.
Absolutely. I was not expecting a welcome as warm as I received. And I'm just so tickled for the press coverage, and because I don't have a publicist. You got to pay for that stuff over here. But I just think great music finds its way. And I'm just so tickled for people that drove from Ireland, from Sweden, from just people that Amsterdam, people that came from all over to support me. And I can't wait to get back. We're making strides. I'm literally working on it as we speak. To try to get back over there. I'd like to get back over there before the year's over with. I've just got to get the blessing of my C2C folks, because I kind of contractually told them I wouldn't come back for a year, but I kind of want to get back a lot sooner.
Yeah. Well, that's good to hear. I know from going to country over the years, like I generally find that anyone that has featured early on, you know, in their career or lower down on the bill as such, they always seem to come back and get stronger and stronger. And each time they come back to the UK, it just gets bigger and bigger. So hopefully you can grow up on that. I know you only done London. So I was in Glasgow. I was DJing in Glasgow actually for two nights after country to country. And then I'm from Belfast pretty much. So we always tend to miss out on what London does because they have that whole festival feel. So I definitely think you owe us a bit of a tour around the UK and maybe a bit of Ireland in there as well.
I was going to ask. Yeah. So I know like Maren Morris was big over there first and like, well, Tom Petty, but as far as C2C goes, you know, like Maren, I think would probably be an example. You tend to think that you're Ireland or, well, Northern Ireland and, you know, the rest of like maybe the UK would also be into what I do as well.
Yeah, 100%. No, without a doubt. I think you'll have friends wherever you go. Yeah.
I love that. I can't wait to get back.
So what do you think the future holds for you then? What's you've touched a little bit maybe on what's in the pipeline, but just to finish off, like what's coming down the line for Hannah Dasher?
Well, I believe it's safe to say that TV is 100% in the cards for me. Doing what I love. There's country music involved, and I'm always going to try to whip up a batch of, you know, some recipe for something, because I, you know, cooking is a love language for me. I just it's a dying art, another torch that I've wanted to carry forward. As well, comedy, you know, you can't I grew up with a lot of pretty girls, so I had to learn, and I was not the prettiest girl in the room, so I had to learn how to be funny and capture the attention of a room. But I think you're going to get a taste of all the hats that Hannah wears on the screen. And I don't know if I'm allowed to announce it or not yet, but we're working on a cookbook. I'll say that.
Okay. So, very good. I seen your reels. You're like, you're big for reels, and I seen one of your reels from Smoke about the Diablo burger from Smoke.
Oh yeah.
I'm gonna have to try that myself.
I had to Google what that was, and I kind of had to make it up as I went. Which I do, but yeah. Yeah, Diablo sandwich. That looked like one of the funniest parts. What's your funniest or what's your favorite quote in the movie?
I am over here at home. I'm really bad for speeding. I'm always getting stopped by the cops or the police for speeding. So over here you get penalty points. So every time you're like, you break a speed limit and you get caught, you get 3 points, and you're only allowed 12 on your license. But for the first three, you have the option of doing like a speed awareness course and like getting like educated on speed, or else take the points. So the first time around, I took the speed awareness course, and I went to it, and I wore a t-shirt, and on the t-shirt it said, "What we're dealing with here is a complete lack of respect for the law."
A complete lack of respect for the law. The Germans ain't got nothing to do with it. Remember that? Golly, Jackie, listen, you know that he ad-libbed a lot of that movie.
Very good. He's great. You some bit.
I love it. Yeah, it's the highest grossing film, 1977. Same year Elvis died. Uh-huh. And another big influence of mine is Elvis. And same year Skinner's plane crashed. History there.
Well, it's a great film for sure. But I just want to say a huge thanks for taking the time to come on and speak to me.
The job that you guys do is so important, and I love doing interviews. I'm sorry I talk so damn much, but
makes it easy for
fact
me.
That, well, but the fact that you take time to showcase me, you know, like, you know, that you take a risk to show off someone that's undiscovered in for the lack of a better term, and to give us a platform and to give us, you know, an audience means the world to me. So anytime I'm over there, you know, come to a show. We'd love to have you.
Good. Oh, no, that's good. Good to chat. And like, you know, it's good to get your vibe and get your name out there as well. But as a DJ, like, I want to play the music that gets people up and dancing, and you fit the bill. So thanks for that.
Well, you ought to see the live show with the band. I love it. But thank you for having me. You rock my socks off, man.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it. And safe travels and all the gigs that are coming up.
I appreciate that. I'm looking forward to them and can't wait to get back over and see you in person.
Yeah, that would be great. But thanks again, and God bless.
All right. God bless you, man. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to another Country Conversation with DJ Chris Armstrong. We hope you enjoyed today's show.
I love the show, guys. You're awesome.
For more information and updates, make sure to follow DJ Chris Armstrong on Facebook and on Instagram at DJ_Chris Armstrong.
I always follow him.
Make sure to stay up to date with the latest episodes on Spotify, Amazon, DJChrisArmstrong.com, and more.
It's all online.
On the web.
Until next time, take care.